local musicians. The Music Library, acquiring, organizing, reviewing, and compiling charts. Public Affairs, interviewing groups, attending events, recording lectures. Public Relations, postering, graphic design, and programming. You can host your own show or work on a collective. Production, audio editing, and PSA building. And once you feel comfortable, you can even volunteer to help the volunteers. So volunteer with us at CJSF 90.1. Email us at vol4cjsf@sfu.ca.
Hey, welcome back to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. I'm Jesse. And yeah, listen to our former production coordinator, Jason, there. Come volunteer with us. We have so much opportunity, so many opportunities, so many different ways to get involved with us here at the station. We're largely volunteer run, and you don't need any experience at all. If there's anything you're interested in doing that is at all tangentially related to radio or the arts or public affairs or anything like that, we'll give you the training and the tools and the opportunity you need to learn how to do it and to live your radio dreams, as I like to say. You can be like Min, who we just heard my conversation with Min talking about Ender's Game, a movie from 2013, longer ago than I thought, but worth checking out. I'll watch anything with Harrison Ford in it. And or you can be like me right now, host this show. Lots of space to come do that. I highly recommend it. You can get in touch with our current volunteer coordinator, Jeremy, at vol4cjsf@sfu.ca. That's V-O-L and then the number 4, cjsf@sfu.ca. Or you can just come by the station. We are in the basement, the ground level. It's the basement, but it's like a garden suite, you know, where we can see the outside, but part of it is underground. Anyway, of the Student Union Building at SFU's Burnaby campus. Just come down to the bottom floor. You can't miss us. And speaking of Jeremy, our new volunteer coordinator, he has a show here on the station, a brand new show that had its first episode last Thursday. It's called the 60-Minute Stage Dive. And it's all about sort of screamo and loud music. Jeremy's originally from Lethbridge, so he's bringing a little bit of his Alberta hardcore bona fides here. And it is on Thursday nights at, oh my goodness, 8 p.m. That's right. And it's great. I listened to the first episode last week. Jeremy had some good stories, and he started the show off with a track by Vancouver's very own Japandroids. Not quite in the screamo side of things, but he played Darkness on the Edge of Gastown, which is one of their heaviest songs, perhaps, and just an all-time classic. So check out 60-Minute Stage Dive tonight, episode 2 at 8 p.m., part of our completely stacked Thursday afternoon evening slate, featuring Talk Coordinator Nicole's show, featuring The Arts Show with Jacob, featuring Danny's Analog Archives, our local community journalist who also does a show exploring our own archives, Rad Radio, just so much going on. You won't need to change the dial at all. And for now, we'll listen to, I'm going to say, my favorite Japandroid song, a song that really crystallized and encapsulated a period of my life when I was just getting into radio and the mixtape. This is from 2010 by Japandroids. It's called Younger Us.
Dead. I think this feeling was never gonna end. listening to CJSF at 90.1 FM in Burnaby. CJSF is diverse, independent, and yours, sharing music and voices from genres and cultures around the world, reflecting you and the rest of your community. You make CJSF diverse.
This is Danny Nezvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. United Way BC has recently brought attention to an underrepresented demographic in the province currently facing increasing rates of food insecurity. Post-secondary students who have previously been in government care. To help address this issue, United Way BC has released the Youth Futures Education Fund, which, as stated by United Way, provides low barrier access to funds for basic living expenses like food, rent, tech, childcare, and more. CJSF reached out to United Way BC for an interview in order to learn more about the fund, as well as the issue it aims to address. We got in contact with Trisha Dulku, United Way's Strategic Initiatives Manager, who spoke with us about the findings from a recent TD survey that present growing levels of food insecurity among post-secondary students, and thus the need for the Youth Futures Education Fund.
Yeah, so that TD survey, the new one, it does show that a majority of Canadian post-secondary students, 92%, are stressed about money. And there have been a lot of studies done focused on specific institutions as well, even within BC, talking about how food insecure students are. Now, this particular priority population that we're focused on with the Youth Futures Education Fund are youth who've been in government care. So for those of your listeners who don't understand what that term is of government care, essentially it means that these are youth who've been in the foster care system for a period of their life growing up. So they didn't necessarily have the stability of family, that stable home. Oftentimes they might have been kind of going from home to home without having that sense of security that many of us would have, particularly those of us who are familiar with, you know, a nuclear family lifestyle. And so what happens is that when they turn 19, they age out. And when they age out, they lose access to any of their foster care parents or caregivers that they were connected to. They lose access to any of those support workers that are available to them through the Ministry of Children and Family Development. And they're essentially just handed their birth certificates and told good luck. So they're out on their own. And so when they're And these are kids, these are young people who really want to pursue their futures. You know, they have dreams, they have hopes, like all other young people. They want to get a good job, they want to start their own families. But it's so hard when you don't have that stability of support that you can lean on. And even though there is the BC government's tuition waiver program, which does waive the cost of tuition as well as mandatory fees for a lot of these young people, it's still, and I'm sure you know this, when you're going to school, it's not just about the tuition. There's the cost of rent, making sure you have a roof over your head. There's the cost for food and groceries. And now more than ever, those costs are climbing as well. Sometimes there's the need for really expensive textbooks or particular school supplies. Or even, you know, given some of the hard situations that some of these young people have dealt with being in the care system, maybe there's like a triggering situation that can come up where they suddenly need to access mental health and counseling supports. And so what the Youth Futures Education Fund does is it provides these young people with that supplemental funding support for all of these needs so that they can really just pursue their studies and have that stability.
Dulku then discussed the need for further community and government investment for students facing food insecurity.
I think whenever different organizations, institutions, parts of our community come together to support our young people, then that's a good thing, because then it can really help make sure that it provides that stable, that spine, that support that these folks need so they can really learn to stand on their own 2 feet. And when these are young people that we should be investing in, because at the end of the day, they're our future, right? They're the ones who are going to be working, building up, and part of the workforce. They're the ones who are going to be paying into CPP and all of those kinds of programs that, folks who are getting older will be needing support, and they're the ones who are going to be that front line. And so anytime we can invest in these young people, and I don't just mean United Way, all parties across the board, government institutions, even in the private sector, corporate entities, when we're investing in our young people, it's a good investment because it's going to pay dividends for us all down the line.
Next, some of the stories that United Way BC has been hearing from post-secondary institutions regarding food insecurity on campus.
There are a lot of stories that we've heard over the years, especially since this fund was, the YFEF fund was first put together in 2015. I can tell you that most recently, we've been hearing more and more from our partners at all of the public post-secondary institutions about the food insecurity that their staff are witnessing right on campus. I'll give you an example. So just a few months ago, we heard a report about a student attending a university that's based on Vancouver Island who has been in government care and is pursuing their studies there, but they were found to be dumpster diving for essentials that they needed on campus. And so these are the kinds of situations that we really want to mitigate with the Youth Futures Education Fund, because it's important for young people to have the agency that they need, as well as the dignity of choice when it comes to those essentials that they absolutely need. And we don't want youth to feel like they're having to be in survival mode when they're just trying to study and get ahead in life. We really want them to thrive so that they can access all those supports that they need.
Lastly, Tricia Dolku reaffirmed the importance of the Youth Futures Education Fund as a way of aiding students who have previously been in government care.
I mean, I'll give you another case in point. We had a young person that's attending an institution in northern BC, and they were evicted from the home that they were sharing with a couple other youth who've also been in care. And so the three of them were looking for stable housing, which was very hard to find close to campus that was affordable. One of the things that YFEF did was ensure that they had access to funds very quickly in a very low barrier manner, so that they can quickly secure a living space, including the cost for a damage deposit. And that's one of the things as well, is that when you're living paycheck to paycheck, or you're really relying on high interest debt like credit cards to try and take care of you in emergencies or unexpected situations, that in itself can be very emotionally draining. And so with YFEF, it's really vital for that that fund to be available, especially for these unexpected and emergent situations too.
Once again, that was our conversation with Tricia Dolku, the Strategic Initiatives Manager for United Way BC, on the Youth Futures Education Fund, which aims to serve post-secondary students, and in particular post-secondary students who have previously been in government care, who are facing issues such as food insecurity. This has been Danny Nazvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. This segment would not have been possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca.
Thank you. You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM Radio. It's Burnaby. Bum, 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 bum.
Waiting, anticipating, oh, the precious building. Kinda got the feeling like I've got a new lease on the life I'm leading, where I just abandon everything. everything I'm feeling, and as it gets darker, I don't have to see it. I can close the curtains, choose not to believe it. Everybody's laughing, we're having such a good time. Everybody's dancing, we don't read the headlines. As the world is slowly burning, I can't help this earthly yearning.
Before the high-tech gadgets used to track bird migration today, a Louisiana ornithologist studied migration with one simple tool, a telescope aimed at the moon. George Lowry dreamed up moonwatching in the 1940s to prove that birds regularly migrated across the Gulf of Mexico. He knew you could see the silhouettes of migrating birds passing in front of the full moon through a telescope. Working with an astronomer, Lowry turned moonwatching counts into standardized measurements to compare the amount of migration at different places and times. On a ship docked on the coast of Yucatan, Lowry pointed his telescope out over the Gulf. He calculated that 3,700 birds crossed an imaginary one-mile line on the water every hour. Then, in the 1950s, he organized the first continent-wide survey of migration patterns with thousands of volunteers across North America. Moonwatching became obsolete once scientists began using radar to monitor migration. But you can still point a telescope at the moon and see those flickering silhouettes of birds on the move. Learn more about the history of bird migration research in Rebecca Heisman's book, Flight Paths, How a Passionate and Quirky Group of Pioneering Scientists Solved the Mystery of Bird Migration. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
Hey, welcome back to Speak Up here on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. I'm Jesse. Just heard Jan's World is Burning while you heard Bird Note. And then before that, you heard World is Burning by Jan. And before that, you heard Danny's piece about United Way's Youth Futures Program. And we're going to wrap up the show with a piece out of CHLY and CVOX about the Youth Climate Corps of British Columbia. And I will be back next week to chat with you before I take off for a few weeks. Don't worry, there'll still be stuff happening on the radio. And yeah, Democracy Now! Is up next. So stick around and keep listening to CJSF for a great day and night of community radio programming.
This is a CHLY and CVOX news update. This summer, the Youth Climate Corps of BC expanded to Courtney, employing a small team of young climate action workers and collaborating with local organizations including Project Watershed, Lake Trail Community Education Society, and Lush Valley. As the Youth Employment Organization's first season in Courtney comes to a close, the team presented their achievements to local governments in hopes of renewed funding for next year. The program employed three climate action mobilizers, youth aged 17 to 30, as well as a program coordinator and program lead. Mikasa Quaife is the Courtney Division's program lead, and she spoke with CHLY and CVOX about the Youth Climate Corps, or YCC's, impacts in the Valley.
I think for the most part, people have been really happy to have us here. I think we were a little bit nervous to maybe encounter people who were not as excited to have us here, but everyone seems really happy with the work that we're doing and really happy that we're here and able to support a lot of organizations that a lot of other people already support. And everyone thinks that it's great that we're giving youth good green jobs.
The local division came to the Valley through the recommendation and request of Janine Tazioli, manager of environmental engineering for the city of Courtney, who learned of the organization at an event where the YCC was presenting. The city was able to help support the new local division with money granted to Courtney through the local government climate action program. The Courtney Youth Climate Corps team presented their season summary at the City of Courtney regular council meeting on August 27th. After the presentation, Tazioli put forward the staff recommendation to continue the program and encourage other neighboring municipal governments to add their support as well.
Staff are proposing that we continue the program. Like I said, we receive provincial funding through the government climate action plans. We are proposing to continue supporting YCC, but we acknowledge that the work of YCC is within our community, and our community is beyond our municipal boundary. Mm-hmm. And I think that shows with the partnerships that YCC has forged. And so it would be great to see support from some other local governments as well, and to see how far we can take this climate action on the ground and really approach this in a unified way.
The local YCC team also shared their presentation with both the City of Comox Council on September 3rd and the Comox Valley Regional District Board of Directors on September 9th. Program lead Mikasa Quaife feels the presentations were well received and is hopeful that the program will continue next year. Quaife shared that it is significant to create these employment opportunities in a time of extreme youth unemployment rates across Canada, and particularly in BC. Additionally, by increasing the capacity of local communities, the YCC enables youth to find meaningful work in their own communities rather than having to move or commute to bigger cities.
And of course, we're paying them a living wage, so it makes it possible for them to choose to do this work rather than something else that might pay more but might not align as well with their values. And then they're also able to support the climate action work that's already happening in their community, and it really increases the capacity of organizations that are already doing really good work in the community.
There has been no lack of work for the climate action mobilizers this summer, partnering with groups throughout the Comox Valley. Some projects have included reducing food waste and helping redistribute food in the community with Lush Valley, monitoring water quality with local streamkeeper groups, and doing ecological restoration work with Project Watershed. A highlight for Quaife has been building and strengthening community connections between the various groups the team has worked with, and sharing knowledge across organizations.
It's also been really rewarding for myself and for the youth, I think, to see all of the good work that's happening in the community and to be connected with individuals in the community that really care and that are working hard to make a difference. It really helps, I think, everyone feel like they're not alone.
Through the program, one of the young employees, Maya Johnson, also initiated a climate action book club at the Courtney Public Library to build greater community connection and spark conversation. The first meeting took place on September 2nd with an ambitious read, Voices for the Islands by Sheila Harrington.
I don't think everyone had fully read the book, but we still had a really great discussion, and I think everyone had a really great time. And the next book is called The Annual Migration of Clouds, and that one is a much lighter read, and I'm really excited for the next book club. And yeah, it was super fun and really inspiring, and there was really great conversation.
Quaife says the first meeting had about 7 people join, and they are hoping for many more at the next meeting on October 7th.
They are going to be on the first Tuesday of every month, and Maya, who has started the book club, is really keen to continue on after her contract ends. Obviously, we would love to continue to pay her to do it, but I think she'll stay on as a volunteer and continue to run the book clubs after the program's over. And we're hoping that we'll get funding again next year, and then that would definitely be something that we would pick up again.
Youth Climate Corps divisions across BC generally run from 4 to 8 months, with a long-term goal of running year-round, providing job experience and a living wage to groups of youth rotating through the program. Quaife says this would mean reaching more youth as well as providing more consistency with a year-round presence and maintaining community relationships. Quaife says working with youth has been great, seeing their passion and fresh perspectives untainted by the cynicism of time.
It's really nice to have their fresh ideas, and also they just care so much. And it's nice to have a fresh perspective that's not marred by, you know, decades of hearing about all the bad news that's happening or all of the critiques around solutions.
More information about the YCC is available online at youthclimatecorps.com, along with other opportunities to get involved. The organization can also be found on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok at Youth Climate Corps. Anyone interested in joining the Climate Action Book Club's next discussion, October 7th, can visit the front desk of the Courtney Library to pick up a copy of The Annual Migration of Clouds by Premi Mohammed. For CHLY and CVOX News, this is Heather Watson.
This report, in partnership with CVOX, was made possible with the support of the Local Journalism Initiative, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and listeners like you. You can find more news updates, interviews, and stories from our nonprofit newsroom, as well as our news and current affairs program, Midcoast Morning, at chly.ca/news.
Embark Sustainability Society is an independent, student-centered nonprofit working across SFU campuses. Embark focuses on climate and food justice in their programs and initiatives. Some of their ongoing work includes their food rescue program, learning gardens, and sustainability career nights. Discover your role in building a sustainable future based on your unique skills and interests. Learn more at embarksustainability.org and follow along on Instagram at embarksustain.